Welcome to this edition of Buy Hold Sell, brought to you by Livewire Markets, Australia's number one website for expert investment analysis. Buy Hold Sell is a weekly show where two fund managers share their views on a selection of listed companies in their area of expertise. Buyers and sellers are what make the market, and you'll find that our guests don't always agree on the stocks being covered. Hit the subscribe button on your podcast player to be the first to receive new episodes each week. If there are stocks you'd like our guests to discuss, let us know by leaving a comment in the review segment. Remember, the views expressed in this show are not recommendations to invest. You should seek appropriate investment advice before making any investment decisions. And of course, please read the disclaimer in the show's notes. Let's get into the show.
Welcome to Buy Hold Sell, brought to you by Livewire Markets. My name is Vishal Teksanani, and today we're discussing small caps. Have we missed the boat on small caps? To discuss this, we've got Dean Fremder from Perpetual and Simon Conn from Investors Mutual. Simon, let's start with you. Big gains in the Small Ords Index in recent times. We were just 7% shy of the February high. Are you seeing value in the asset class?
Yeah, look, it's been an amazing rally, but look, the market's pretty full. It's pretty hard to find a lot of value, to be perfectly frank. And there's a huge amount of uncertainty. The stimulus in the real economy is massive, about $160 billion, and that's distorting the real world. So it's very hard to work out the fundamentals. And then the financial markets have been heavily inflated by very low interest rates and a lot of liquidity. So look, it's generally pretty difficult to find good value in the market currently.
So that's a really strong keyword there. Valuations are full. I'm going to take that and lob that your way, Dean. Are valuations full? Are small caps expensive?
Valuations for the broader market definitely seem to be full. But having said that, there's plenty of opportunities if you know where to look. And I think we try and fish where there's less fishermen around. And ultimately, there's lots of profitable companies out there that are probably under the radar because everyone's really focused right now on the sexy kind of conceptual tech companies and whatnot. But if you actually know where to look, you can find some great profitable businesses with long track records, earning good cash flow and trading at a reasonable valuation. So yes, there's overall market's expensive, but there's some good pockets available of value too.
Okay, we'll talk about where you're fishing in a moment. There's something I'd really like to know about what's happening with value managers right now. You're both quality and value managers, and you rely on seeing companies' cash flows and earnings forecasts to model returns and whatnot. But in an environment of lockdowns, how do you value a company's cash flow?
That's a fantastic question. I think ultimately you need to start with, is this company going to survive through what could be a very uncertain and potentially damaging period? We always prioritize balance sheet as kind of the first part of our process. So fortunately, if a company has a good balance sheet and is not too geared, it means that no matter what the circumstance, they'll be able to survive through it. And I guess what we're really trying to do is understand on more of a normal type of year. So once we get through this period of uncertainty, whether it's 2, 3, 6, 12 months, I wish I knew. But ultimately, once they get through that, has the long-term earnings power of the company changed? And if it hasn't, where do we think that earnings power exists? So what we were doing is looking forward to more of a mid-cycle earnings and then valuing companies based on that basis.
Okay. Simon, same question to you. Has the government disrupted value investing?
It's certainly distorted the market, the real economy significantly. I mean, we've got a huge number of loans on furlough, not paying interest. We've got the JobKeeper distorting the employment market. The banks, you know, rental abatement. There's just a huge level of noise in the market. So look, you know, as Dean was saying, when assessing a fundamental valuation, you've really got to look at the franchise, the strength of the competitive advantage the company has. The quality of the management teams is really important, and I think that's really what's come through over this last 2 month period. Talking to management teams, you've really assessed who's got their management team positioned well and who's been able to react really well. Those that are floundering have become more obvious, and I think, you know, reporting season really highlight that. And then again, as Dean said, you've got to look forward, you know, beyond this disruptive period and try and work out, you know, a reasonable level of earnings based on history, but not assuming that we're going to go back to what we were before, because I think it's fair to say the economy was pretty soft. Inner reporting season wasn't stellar, and you know there's going to be a lot more unemployment going forward, and a lot less housing starts. For instance, confidence is going to be a bit lower, and we've just got to get past this September cliff that everyone's talking about when the JobKeeper ends, and then you know make a reasonable assessment. It's going to be a very interesting Christmas period.
Okay, and that's a great segue into the next question. What are the key indicators you're looking for that will shape the performance of small caps? And something I'm curious about is the small cap story tied to international broad market sentiment, or is it tied to the reopening of the domestic economy? Because small caps, their earnings are more domestically oriented.
Look, I think traditionally, you know, the small cap market is more domestically focused. You know, companies such as McPherson's, Ausbrokers, Steadfast, these are companies that are more focused on the domestic market. And really, you know, it's the performance of the Australian economy that will determine, you know, their outcome. I'd have to say, though, the outlook for the Australian economy, given how we've dealt with the health outcomes, has got to be a lot better than some of the overseas markets. So it's probably a good place to be investing. But look, there's a lot of noise in the economy and in the market, which makes it, you know, very difficult.
Okay. Dean, same question to you. What are some of the key indicators you're looking for?
Sure. I think just to finish off on Simon's point, which I completely agree with, I think small caps, one of the great things about it is that a lot of the companies have more stock-specific drivers than just the broader economy. And so if you're able to find some of these gems in industries that are growing for different reasons or companies that are growing for reasons beyond just the general economy doing well, it's a great place to really find some good returns. So small caps is a great place for that. I think undoubtedly, as kind of Simon mentioned, the level of stimulus from both central banks and governments is pretty insane. Pretty crazy. I don't want to use the word unprecedented because everyone uses it, but oh well, I did it anyways. And beyond that as well, you've obviously got question marks around the economic recovery, which who knows how that will shape out. But I think at the end of the day, the big question is how are both those two factors, both the stimulus and the economic recovery, going to impact company earnings? And as Simon mentioned, it's less so about how they're going to impact company earnings this year and more about what does it actually do to the long-term earnings power of these businesses. And the truth is, some of the better positioned businesses with better business models are going to come out of this stronger than some of their weak competition. And it's really about just finding the companies and making sure you back those companies that can do that.
Okay, great segue into the next question. So let's talk about the inner workings of you as managers. Portfolio construction. What have you been doing since March? Where are you overweight? where are you finding those opportunities? And sure. What's your cash level looking like as well?
Sure. So from a portfolio construction perspective, nothing's really changed that much in the sense of we only invest in profitable businesses. We don't invest in any concept stocks. We don't invest in companies that have excessive levels of debt. And so from that perspective, nothing's really changed too much. And what we tried to do is always focus on businesses that have a track record of earnings, a track record of generating cash, reasonable balance sheets, and management teams that have a long track record of being able to deliver value. So coming through this, that hasn't changed too much. If you look at where we're really exposed, we have quite a bit of exposure in the insurance sector, in agriculture. We've had a reasonable gold holding, which has helped us really nicely through the period. Clearly, mass printing of money all around the world isn't too bad for the gold price. But ultimately, we're focusing on companies and industries that can grow independently of what the economy does. I mean, ultimately, the economy could go anywhere in the next 6 months, and we're focused on businesses that can grow regardless. So that's how we're positioned, quite diversified. We were able to pick up some great kind of babies thrown out with the bathwater during the period, which is great. And cash levels have kind of hovered between 5 and 10% over the last 3 or 4 months, which is pretty much standard for us. The portfolio is quite defensive to start with.
Okay, same question to you, Simon. What's your portfolio construction looking like? How's that changed since March?
Look, the portfolio construction process hasn't changed for some. You know, it's always about looking for companies with a competitive advantage, the recurring predictable earnings, good management teams trading at a reasonable price. So that hasn't changed. What we've been doing is, you know, really thinking about the exposure going forward and where the risk is in the portfolio. Obviously taking a view, you know, looking at the housing starts and the level of unemployment, that, you know, the housing market's going to slow. So we've had a long holding in GWA, which has been a good performer for us. And we had a position in CSR, and we've reduced and exited those positions. And we've reweighted to sort of more defensive businesses, so things like Metcash and Invacare, where we think, you know, they're good long-term businesses and more resilient, you know, and trading attractive prices. They both raised capital recently. They were opportunities to get to buy into those businesses. So trying to, you know, make the business, the portfolio more resilient to what we think is going to be a pretty tough environment.
And what's your cash level at?
Yeah, currently about 12 to 13%.
Is that a defensive posture or...?
Look, cash is an outcome of the process. I mean, you know, there's capital raisings coming every day, so it does change from, you know, change around. But, you know, we've got a you know, reasonable level of liquidity, and I think that's always a bit of an insurance policy in a market like this. But look, at the end of the day, you know, still, you know, 80-85% invested. That's what really drives the outcomes, and it's the stocks you hold that matter.
Okay. In the last question, Dean mentioned concept stocks. And if we think about Investors Mutuals, one of the things you're very wary about, Simon, is investing in fads.
Yep.
You avoided the tech wreck. Are there spots in the small cap market which are worrying you?
Yeah, look, there's extreme levels of enthusiasm in particular bubbles of the market. And I often think that there's not one share market, there's two. you know, there's not one investor or one class of people buying shares. There's two. There's investors and speculators. There's the racetrack. I mean, the casino. I mean, the stock exchange. And then those people investing for the longer term. And I think, you know, the stock market's a great place to make money gradually through time. And it's a great way to lose money in the short term. And so we've seen fads, you know, the tech wreck, the mining sector pre-GFC. At the moment, it's the buy now, pay later sector that's been really, you know, very hot. You know, Afterpay, but also Sizzle and Wizzr and all these other things that have popped up. Around January, February, you know, the med tech sector has been one that's very hot. So companies such as Nanosonics, ProMedicus, you know, good businesses, but valuations really pushed well beyond where we think fundamentals sit.
Simon's view on BNPL is pretty clear. It's sell now, sell later. What are you thinking of the fads and small caps?
Yeah, I think there's kind of two more, all-encompassing fads that we pick up on. One is the next stock. So it's the next Afterpay, it's the next CSL. And there seems to be this kind of notion that you can pay pretty much any price for an early stage company if it looks similar to what those companies did at 10 years ago, whenever they first started. There will be some winners, of course, but paying silly prices for anything that looks similar is tricky. And the other thing would be, I guess, companies with large addressable markets. And a larger addressable market, don't get me wrong, is a really attractive thing. If a company has something special, that means it can actually capture a large part of that market. But paying, again, a crazy multiple or a crazy valuation for a stock just because it's going after a big market, again, is a little bit crazy. And I think people have this tendency or this desire to buy lottery tickets. They feel, I buy a share, and if they crack the code, I'm going to make a fortune. But the problem is, how many times have you won the lottery?
I haven't won any. Okay. All right. So we talked about fishing earlier on in the episode. What is your one favorite spot where you're fishing for value right now?
Yeah, sure. I think I would say companies that just are operating in industries that aren't that sexy. Everyone's focused, like I said at the start, on the tech industry and whatnot. But there's some really great profitable opportunities in kind of old world, more boring industries. And I'll give you an example. Here, there, and everywhere, stock code HT1. It's the largest radio station network owner in the country. They've also got the benefit of being Carl Sandilands' boss, which is potentially a tricky situation to be in. But you can basically buy the whole company today for $280 million. And with that, you get $110 million of cash. You get a stake in a digital business worth, we think, between $50 and $100 million. And you get a radio network that's generated, on average, cash flow of $50 million a year for the past 5 years. So perhaps it's not as sexy as the next Afterpay or the next CSL, but we think that's pretty attractive.
Okay. Simon, same question to you. What is your one most favourite area within small cap land right now?
I quite like the packaging sector. It's a pretty boring, as Dean was saying, sector, and it's been a bit out on the nose, but Pact and ProPack are two stocks that we own. I mean, ProPack was trading at 7 cents in the sell-off, and it's one now trading at 20 cents. All they had to do was confirm guidance and say that they've paid down debt, and the stock's doubled. And it's a really boring business. You know, they make flexible packaging, which underpins a lot of the activity, a lot of the food that we're consuming now in supermarkets. You know, they provide the packaging for that. And Pact in the rigid sector, again, you know, new management team. You know, rigids, I think it's a really solid business. You know, obviously the debt got a little bit too high, but you know, these businesses generate good cash, and I think through time debt will reduce, and the stocks will re-rate as they continue to deliver and hit their targets.
Okay. Whether markets go up or down from here, it's all about recognizing that there's good businesses out there and that they're not necessarily sexy.
Thanks for listening to Buy, Hold, Sell, brought to you by Livewire Markets, Australia's number one source of expert investment analysis. Register for free at livewiremarkets.com to discover more exclusive investing articles, videos, and podcasts.